show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We're going to have a good show for you today. We hope to, anyway. Can't help but listening to that opening song all the time and hearing those words, do you believe what they told you? Do you believe what they said? I guess my answer to that is no, hell no. In referring to politicians most of the time, I don't want to condemn them all, but I think you'll agree that there's ample evidence as of late that we should look with a jaundiced eye at much of what's coming out of Washington, D.C. these days. Hey, we've got a couple of good guests coming up today. We've got Brent Badowski from The Hill magazine. In the second hour, he's going to talk about this huge mess. He thinks it's a really big mess concerning these torture tapes, and I agree. And in the first hour, we're going to have Congresswoman Hilda Solis from California. She's going to be with us, right around 40 minutes from now, something like that, to talk about the passage of the new Energy Independence and Security Act that Mr. President signed this morning. So we'll have her on to talk about that. I do want to send out our heartfelt condolences to Dennis Kucinich. Dennis's brother, only 52 years old, passed away. I do not know the details, so I can't pass that on to you, but I hate to hear about Dennis Kucinich losing his brother, especially, God, only 52 years old. I was noticing a little while ago that Mr. Limbaugh, now I didn't listen, had somebody report to me that he's trying to weasel on his comments that he made yesterday about women aging. He does what he always does. Well, I wasn't saying that. I was just saying that's what America is saying. I love it. The guy just, he's great at weaseling. And the fire. I'm sure you've all seen details about the fire by now. And it's a shame. They're in the Eisenhower building, the old executive office building. I'm very familiar with it. Been in there. You know, I hate to see something like this happen to one of our national treasures, although that is, and let me be clear about this, I think the old executive office building is probably the ugliest building in Washington, D.C. Whoever designed it has some sort of a fetish with small columns. I don't know how many there are around that building, but it's gray and drab and ugly looking, that building is, and I don't know. It looks like something that belongs in a monster movie. I don't know. Call me crazy. That's just the way I feel about that particular building. But as you all know, there was a fire in it this morning, and wouldn't it be delightful to find out that I guess it took place in Cheney's ceremonial office, and no, he wasn't there at the time. He was over at the Oval Office telling the president, giving Junior Bush his marching orders for the day, no doubt. But wouldn't it be refreshing to find out that it was caused by, a cigar that Cheney left laying around or something. I'd love that. Anyway, I noticed that the Secret Service came out with a statement, said the blaze was located in Cheney's suite of ceremonial offices, his working offices in the West Wing, and Secret Service spokesman Darren Blackford. Well, he said the building was evacuated as a precaution. I happen to know Darren Blackford very well, and I did not know that he was doing the speaking for the Secret Service. Now, Darren's been with the Secret Service for a long, long time, and he's an Ohio boy. Yes, he is. Not a boy anymore, but... I've had to sneeze. Good thing for this little button here. But anyway, that's from Darren Blackford, spokesman for the Secret Service. District of Columbia firefighters poured water on the blaze, broke windows, and moved furniture onto a balcony. I'm sure you've all seen the pictures of the water pouring out of the old executive office building, now called the Eisenhower Building. So, interesting. There's going to be a lot of damage to that building. I'm sure everybody was evacuated and told to go home. So, I guess over 1,000 people working there. But it's a huge building. When you start walking around it, and there's always construction. In fact, there's construction going on it right now all along the west side of it. They've got scaffolding up and all that, not up the side of the building, but the street blocked and all that. So always work going on in Washington, D.C. I don't care when you go, where you go in Washington, there's always something going on. Of course, down at the Capitol building right now, they're still working on that big underground visitor center, that money pit. I think it's a shame, and I understand that there are many, many people who like to go through the Capitol building and all, and have been through there a lot, and have been fortunate enough to be able to go many places that the public doesn't get to go on a regular basis. But it's just a shame that the public no longer going to have the freedom to go through, stand under the dome, and now they're going to have to go to this visitor center, which is so artificial. It's so much better to go through the actual building. I don't know whether we're going to be there yet for the State of the Union this year. They are going to have a little conference on that Monday, and we've been invited to go to it. It all depends on expenses. Would have the opportunity to do the show live from the Hall of Presidents right there in the U.S. Capitol building, but the show doesn't have a big budget for things like that, so we're going to see if we can raise funds. Maybe we should have a little telethon here on the show and raise funds to do the show live from the Capitol building. I think that's on the, 26th? Don't have a calendar right here. 23rd, 24th, 25th, maybe the 27th on a Monday anyway in January. Here we are at, and we are in, by the way, in January, going to be in Washington for the Health USA conference coming up. We'll be there on a Thursday and a Friday. We're going to do the show from that. Always enjoy it, and looking forward to meeting with our good friend Billy Shears and his lovely wife. Going to do that at the end of January. I hope it's not too cold. That's right. Well, now that you've been apprised of everything we're planning on doing in in the near future, I was watching TV for a moment last night, and I saw one of those commercials. I think it was for Lexus. Now, if you've got a Lexus, don't get all excited about this, but I think it is the season for absolutely ridiculous commercialism right now. I've been seeing these unbelievable commercials that feature some smug guy, surprising his wife by giving her a luxury car with a big bow on top. I think it was a Lexus ad. As a present, yeah, I go out and buy my, somebody a $50,000 car with a big red bow on it all the time. Or popping up a box with a big honking diamond in it some kind. The women always clasp their hands with glee and lean in for a hot, passionate kiss. I see these and I just wonder how stupid do advertisers think guys are. I can tell you exactly what would happen if I spent a month's salary or more on jewelry or worse, a year's income on a car. My spouse would look aghast and try and decide whether calling the hospital for an immediate psychiatric consultant or kicking me somewhere else. I would spend that much on inessential luxury stuff without consulting it? No. And I've been thinking, I don't want to seem like the Christmas Scrooge here, and I know I will, but I wonder what would happen if all of us, and I mean all of us, took a 1 year, 2 year hiatus from the commercialism that the Christmas season brings to us these days. I mean, you know, make an agreement amongst ourselves that we're not going to go out and buy Christmas gifts that overextend our budgets. You know what I'm talking about. Gifts that aren't really needed, a lot of times aren't appreciated. They're obligatory in many cases. What would happen if we did that? If you're members of the Christian faith, for example, wouldn't it be more meaningful to take the family to church and have a nice meal and help feed the poor for a day and maybe contribute a few bucks to a local charity of your choice? Wouldn't that be better than getting involved in the hustle and bustle, being obligated to buy a gift for everyone you know? And you know how that goes. The people at the office, the paper boy, the lawn care folks, your barber, your beautician, your auto mechanic, your mailman, and the list just goes on and on and on. Wouldn't it be nice to just call a moratorium on the whole thing for a couple of years and get your priorities straight? I know. I mean, I have neighbors, just to give you an example, and I know they're not listening, but if they are, I don't care. I've got neighbors who bring cookies every year. Although, the way things have been going with neighbors, I doubt they bring cookies this year. But I do have a couple of neighbors that bring cookies every year. And in turn, we bake and give them cookies. You know, eat your own damn cookies. I don't care for theirs anyway. And they probably feed mine to the dog, so just forget about the whole thing. I'm beginning to sound like a Christmas Scrooge now, but probably so. But the older I get, the less inclined I am to get involved in this insanity of having to see the local hardware store put up their Christmas decorations in late August, and they did this year. And by Christmas, I'm usually real tired of all the phony Merry Christmases I hear, because I know most people don't give a damn if I have a Merry Christmas or not. And as for being careful or politically correct to whom I say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays to, forget that. If you don't like what I wish you, then just forget it. I was just trying to be nice, not make some sort of an everlasting social bond with you. You know, if you're Jewish, for example, and this happened to me recently, if you're Jewish and I don't know it and I say Merry Christmas to you and you're offended, that's just tough. And if you're a Christian and are offended if someone says Happy Kwanzaa, that's tough too. I mean, let's just all be mellow and understand it's the time of the year where maybe, just maybe, humanity can take a break from being politically correct and stabbing each other in the back and try and be a little bit nice to one another without having to spend every last nickel you have and max out your charge cards. I'm just fed up with that this year. I don't know why so much this year. Look, I like giving as much as the next person. And I love the feeling of harmony and love we should all get from one another this time of year. I do. My only problem is that I don't understand why it has to be limited to a month a year. Really. I mean, why can't we treat one another better all year round? Why can't we be generous with our time and our good wishes all year long? Why not? You know, last week I mentioned to you yesterday, I was standing in Rockefeller Center looking at that huge tree and watching the skaters on the ice rink and the look of wonderment on the faces of the children that were there. And I saw parents taking keepsake pictures of their kids. One in particular I can think of that I'll never forget, a couple of cute little girls, probably twins, in their new Christmas coats. And I saw couples embracing with true love and affection, and young and old alike. And the true spirit of Christmas was in the air. It really was. I had that feeling. You know what I'm talking about. And it was just wonderful, and it was satisfying to me. So, whatever you're celebrating this season, if it's a religious holiday, if it's an ethnic celebration, if it's family togetherness, no matter what it is, take some time and enjoy yourselves. And I know in this hustle bustle way of life that we have, a lot of us working 7 days a week, and I do, and I know some of you do as well. And we just never seem to get caught up, and our desks are piled high with work, and you think, oh my God, it's Christmas, you know, Hanukkah season, Kwanzaa season, whatever it happens to be. Take a break. Take a couple of hours at least, sit back, take a breath, and enjoy it. Remember what it's all about to you, no matter what it is to you. Just take a few minutes and relax and enjoy the season. Is that so hard to do? I don't think it is. 866-546-5254. We'd love it if you'd join us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. Really would. We've got guest Brent Badowski from The Hill coming up in the second hour. And in the first hour, Hilda Solis, Congresswoman Hilda Solis from California, going to be with us to talk about the Energy Independence and Security Act. I've got some problems with it. I know some of you do as well. 866-546-5254. Talked about the fire already. I did notice a few little tidbits I wanted to share with you. I see Time Magazine has dropped Bill Kristol and Charles Krauthammer. Long-time contributor, Krauthammer and Kristol. Starting next month, just not going to be there. So that's a good thing. Neither one of them worth a damn as writers. Both of them, in their opinions, have been proven wrong over and over and over again. I don't know when either one of them ever been proven right. So I think that's a good thing that they're getting rid of a few of these right-wingers anyway. And, I made a comment the other day about Ron Paul, and I don't know what's happening out there. I swear I thought I had a pretty good understanding of politics and the left, especially the left, and sometimes they just throw me. And somebody help me understand this Ron Paul thing. We spoke yesterday about all the money he's raised. Had a couple of days, and I mean, I think he set a record the other day. It was over $6 million, the most ever raised in one day on the internet by anybody. I don't understand, and politically it's driving me crazy because I don't have a handle on why it's happening, and I talked about it yesterday, and several of us have gone back and forth in emails, and I think I'll probably put something up on the blog about it tonight. And by the way, don't forget to visit the new blog, Guy James at the Guy James Show, www.theguyjamesshow.com/blog. And if you'd like to go there and comment on something we've put up, why, I hope you will do so. But continuing on with the Ron Paul thing, help me understand this. Here's a guy that is being embraced by many people on the left because he has an anti-war stance. And I understand that. Because on the left, we have Dennis Kucinich, Bill Richardson. Of course, we have leading contenders, Hillary and Obama, and we're not sure exactly what some of those folks would do about the war. I think they would maintain a presence there for a while. But it's just interesting to me that here we have a guy as far right as you can get, Ron Paul. And yes, he's anti-war. I think he saw his opening there to try and use people for that. But at the same time, Paul is as much of an anti-abortion extremist as it gets. Don't forget that. He's proposed federal legislation to define conception as the beginning of life. And he's also tried to deny federal courts jurisdiction to adjudicate abortion cases. And he is near the far end of what's considered the right in terms of immigration policy. Take a good look at Ron Paul's immigration policy. If Ron Paul hasn't exhibited as much of a racist attitude as Tom Tancredo, then I'll eat my hat. And he also favors a drastically reduced role for the government in everything from education to health care. So many of you on the left, health care is an important issue. Don't plan on getting it from Ron Paul. He wants to eliminate the Department of Education, something we've set up in this country so everybody has an opportunity to at least to get educated. He's against that. So, yes, we agree in principle with Mr. Paul on the fact that the war should be ended. But, my God, take a look at these extremist attitudes about everything else. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And speaking of extremist attitudes, how about this Huckabee, I'm sorry. that was a slip there. How about Huckleberry and the Minutemen? Now, the Minutemen, not being one of my favorite organizations, you got to figure that's a wacko group if I've ever seen one. Guys that are willing to take guns and go down and patrol the borders and shoot Mexicans if necessary to keep them from coming across the border to try and get a job when big business is trying to lure them to jobs here in America. But the guy that's ahead of the Minutemen, the Minutemen founder, Gilchrist, he's come out and endorsed Huckabee. Well, now some of the other people in the Minutemen organization saying that that's not right. He's not crazy enough against illegal immigration to merit their support. So Gilchrist yesterday went on a series of radio interviews, and he announcing to listeners he decided to stick with his endorsement. Even though Huckabee's immigration plan was less than perfect. And so others in the group are saying, no, we don't want to go with Huckabee. So who knows where that's going. But isn't it something you'd end up with the endorsement of those Minutemen? Now, that's a wild group, if you ask me. Very, very wild group. I'm not so sure I'd want their endorsement. Going to pause for a break and be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Join us this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up. We'll take a listen to the 1963 Christmas Fan Club message the Beatles recorded exclusively for the club members.
In the meantime, Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Getty Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too.
And you'll hear a Christmas song recorded just for the club series. So be there this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. With their eyes all aglow, we'll find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. It's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loading lots of toys on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.
Hi, it's Diana Krall. Merry Christmas to you. And I wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Season's greetings and happy holidays and all that good stuff. I sure do. You're listening to The Guy James Show, 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us today, once again, we've got Brent Badowski coming up in the second hour, and Congresswoman Hilda Solis coming up in a few minutes in this hour. Wouldn't you know, I talk about Ron Paul for a moment, and during the break there, I was looking at email, and I get this big, long diatribe about we kooks that put Ron Paul up, telling me what a great track star Ron Paul was in high school, and he's been a doctor, and he's been this, and he's been that, and all. Well, that may be. That may be. Ron Paul is also, like I said, as hardcore anti-abortion person as there is. He's against the Department of Education. Kook, I stand by what I said. Kook. He is, in fact, a kook. So I guess I don't need to mention that anymore, but not going to end up with a whole lot of the vote, I wouldn't say. Anyway, no matter how much money he raises. Every once in a while, I run across something on the internet that makes so much sense to me. And I don't want to take a lot of time of your time to read something that I got. But I saw this letter today. It's a letter somebody posted on the Salon magazine. And one of my favorite magazines, my good friend Glenn Greenwald over there, writes for Salon now. And I'm happy for him having that opportunity. But on their comments section, and I found this, and I agree so very much. I watched Senator Dodd the other day talking about this immunity bill for the telecoms who've participated in the spying. And let me just read this letter. It's from someone who calls themselves Holly Golightly on Salon Magazine. I thank Senator Dodd for the opportunity to participate in this debate. For the Senate's edification, I'm 23 years old and a new voter who isn't going away anytime soon. The United States of America is founded upon the rule of law. Senators and representatives swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. According to the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, a document for which centuries of blood and tears have been shed, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized. The letter goes on, yet here the Senate stands, poised to grant immunity to the telecommunication companies for profiting from the warrantless and lawless spying perpetrated upon the law-abiding citizenry. Here the Senate stands, poised to usurp the judicial, the branch of the government responsible for determining whether the laws of the land have been broken and meting out punishment where appropriate. And here the Senate stands, poised to usher in its own irrelevancy. And worst of all, in exchange for nothing, no promises that this flagrant lawbreaking will cease, no testimony to be offered in the course of real and rigorous investigation. What will I tell my children? It's fine to break the law if the president says so. It's fine to break the law if you can lobby Congress to grant you immunity. It's fine to break the law if you can stuff cash into the coffers of senators and representatives. What country is this? I say again, the founders are rolling in their graves. For the past 15 years, I've watched the news and felt disgust for the whole sorry lot of you. You, who purported to lead, yet cower like beaten dogs before the president as if he were king. You, who vote upon legislation you likely don't even read. You who coif your hair into absurd unmoving helmets and whiten your teeth and don designer suits and appear on TV, daring to tell me you represent my interest. You who pass pointless, meaningless resolutions condemning commercials and congratulating professional sports teams for winning while Americans go hungry, while Americans go without health care, while Americans work two jobs to make ends meet, while Americans die in Iraq and Afghanistan. You who swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution and flatter yourselves by conflating your reelection with your interest of your country and constituency. You who fret about keeping your powder dry until the barracks are overrun. You who tell me to live in a constant state of fear but to keep on shopping. Do keep shopping. How proud my children should be to be born American. They'll shop in the face of constant fear with fistful of credit cards, and I'll say to them, what shall we buy tomorrow, children? But of course I have my own ideas. Our very own senator, our very own representative, our very own president. I should buy the whole sorry lot of you to be heeded at all. And so here is the Senate in all its majesty. Where are the Patrick Henrys, the Benjamin Franklins? God save America from her greatest enemy, a pack of pathetic, self-serving cowards. It's a comment by someone called Holly Golightly in Salon Magazine. I think it's very profound. I think it sums up the feelings of very many of us, don't you? Frustration, utter frustration so many times. Isn't it just amazing that Junior Bush doesn't seem to know a damn thing about the now-destroyed CIA torture tapes? Isn't it just amazing? He didn't know about the NIE report, the National Intelligence Estimate, either. And the White House continues to claim that the poor sap didn't know anything about either of those issues until after the fact. And they're telling us that he doesn't learn about this stuff until he picks up his copy of the Washington Times in the morning. oh, sorry, he doesn't read. I forgot that we've got a president of the United States who isn't curious about what's going on in the country that he supposedly rules. I wish that his being uncurious were the problem here, but it is not. Again, we're talking about massive, massive, huge, monstrous lies coming from the Bush administration concerning Bush's role in all of this. Consider the New York Times report today on the torture tapes that makes the White House's contention that he didn't know about any of them absolutely laughable. You would have to be an utter fool to read the specifics of this and not think that you're being hoodwinked and flat-out lied to by this administration. And let me quote the New York Times today. At least four top White House lawyers took part in discussions with the Central Intelligence Agency between 2003 and 2005 about whether to destroy videotapes showing the secret interrogations of two operatives from Al-Qaeda, according to current and former administration and intelligence officials. The accounts indicate that the involvement of White House officials in the discussions before the destruction of the tapes in November of 2005 was more extensive than Bush administration officials have acknowledged. Those who took part, the officials said, included Alberto Gonzalez, who served as White House counsel until early 2005, David Addington, who was the counsel to Vice President Dick Cheney and is now his chief of staff, and John Bellinger III, who until January 2005 was the senior lawyer in the National Security Council, and Harriet E. Myers, who succeeded Mr. Gonzalez as White House counsel. Now, supposedly, if you were to believe the White House press office, if you are to believe anybody in the White House, supposedly, Bush never saw the tapes. Supposedly, he never knew about them. And yet we know that he had a personal interest in the Abu Zubaydah's interrogation. He's talked about it. No one asked the President of the United States if it was okay to destroy the tapes, even though it was illegal to do so. We are supposed to believe that? People whom he's bragged about having so much trust, so much trust in him that they never told him a word about these tapes. I mean, look, we know that the President of the United States gets a daily briefing from the CIA to inform him of things like this, and he didn't have a clue about it. They want us to believe that? Okay, for a moment, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he doesn't know a thing about all this, okay? Let's say he doesn't. Shouldn't he be firing people left and right because they failed in their duties to keep him informed of these important matters? If he didn't know about it, shouldn't he have known? I mean, if you're the President of the United States and those whom you appointed to help you in your duties completely failed in those duties, do you keep them on your staff if you're any kind of a leader at all? Think about that in your job. If you work for a corporation, no matter who you work for, no one I have ever known in the corporate world would put up with such malfeasance. And I don't think any kind of a president would either. That is, if he didn't know. And I would give you 100-to-1 odds that he did. And I think by now, we all know with the record of this administration, the record that we have seen over the years this administration has been in office, that lies roll off their tongue effortlessly. One after another after another. And if you don't like the lies, and if you catch them in a lie, what are you going to do about it, sucker? What are you going to do? That's been their attitude all along. It's still their attitude. It's the attitude they will leave office with. It's a shameful attitude. And yet, we put up with it. Time and time again, we put up with it. And it just makes you wonder what in the world is wrong with this nation when we can be lied to so cavalierly by this White House. Oh, you know, you wake up and it's another big story, another bad story. Tell them anything. Tell them anything you want to tell them. If they don't believe it, who gives a damn? That's the attitude of this White House. Always has been, always will be. Not going to change. Well, we're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in just a minute.
Never wanted anything so much. The not feel your rain. Set me free. I don't want to fall another moment into your gravity. Here I am, and I stand so tall, just the way I'm supposed to be. But you're on to me. I'm fragile, and I thought that I was strong, but you touched me for a little while, and all my fragile strength is gone. Set me free.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. And as promised, we have Congresswoman Hilda Solis from California with us today to discuss the, very fresh, I guess, Energy Independence and Security Act, I think just signed this morning. The Congressman Solis, welcome to the Guy James Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We depend on you folks to let us know what's happening with as I understand it, Mr. Bush did sign this bill this morning.
Yes, he did, and thank goodness, because hopefully this will be an immediate relief for many of our consumers and constituents. One effect immediately that we will see is that there'll be a savings for families from anywhere from $700 to $1,000 per year at the pump, and an overall savings of $22 billion. By 2020. So we'll get there, but it's a good thing for us to celebrate right now around the holidays, because so many of our consumers in the middle class have really taken the brunt of energy insecurity the way this administration has run our energy programs here. It's not been good, and finally today we can say that he reached out to us and agreed with what we thought was best for the American public.
What didn't you get in this bill that you wanted?
Well, we obviously wanted to see that the oil companies and refiners would be paying more into helping us explore, independence, energy independence and things like that. That didn't happen. That was something that obviously the Senate didn't want to go along with either, so that was taken out of the bill. And then also renewable energy standards was taken out. But that doesn't mean it's the end of the debate, because when we come back again in the coming year, in 2008, we're going to have that back on the table. And I really do believe that, once we got this bill underway, and of course it's a compilation of different things, one important area that I focused on was creating green-collar jobs, which would help communities in rural areas and urban areas, inner city, to help rejuvenate our economy by making sure that a lot of these new technologically savvy environmental jobs would be grown in our communities, and those jobs would stay here. They would not be outsourced. So I think the public still has to learn more about what we're doing, but I think it's going to be well received. We're talking about creating 3 million jobs in the course of 10 years and applying about $125 million to help jumpstart this. And with that happening, I know it will have a domino effect in the private sector, because they will move once we, since we have already taken that major step. And I know that there'll be more further small business job growth. There'll be a lot of incentives on the part of our educational academic institutions that will also be chiming in and helping to make sure that we have an adequate labor pool out there to meet this job demand. I mean, so many people in my district, in East Los Angeles, would love to be able to afford to have solar panels, solar heating, and solar, you know, heating for water, and so many different things, even for their car, cell fuels. And if we were able to somehow produce that at such a great level that we could lower the cost, so many more people would apply it. And just think what that would mean by lowering our, you know, our carbon footprint. And I think that the public understands, they're far ahead of it in so many ways, and some people here in the Congress.
Well, I think you're so right. You know, just solar panels, for example, you're right. There's no really tricky technology there. Something that's been around with us for a long time, and were it to be mass-produced, it would be affordable to everybody. And I think you brought up an interesting point. So many of the opponents that talk about Al Gore's film, for example, so many of the opponents that deny global warming and deny that we need greening and so forth, they always talk about the huge cost that will be, but they never want to talk about the plethora of jobs that will be created, just like you mentioned.
Well, I think that, you know, in California and in other parts of the world, we're already seeing the technology in place. It just hasn't been given that kind of, promotion, so that people are more fully aware of what advantages are out there. And I think now with the incentives that are put in the energy bill, that we're going to see more of that. We're going to see even the Midwesterners more involved in helping us kind of reuse, for example, different sources of biofuel, even methane gas that could be utilized in a better capacity to help light our campuses, our universities, and even our government buildings. Right now in my district, we do have a project that's been in place now for a couple of years, for at least 15 years. Why haven't we been able to expand it? Because, quite frankly, the government hasn't made an investment to say this is where we need to go as a priority and to create more independence so that we don't have to fall back on the old traditional ways, digging more oil wells, creating more carbon, and then obviously doing transactions with Middle Eastern countries that are not always our friends. So I think that there's a big change in the attitude of the American public, and I'm happy to say that I really have to give a lot of credit to our leadership, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, because she really believed in this and got so many people who were naysayers, even in our own party, to agree with it. I mean, the CAFE standards alone was monumental. Monumental that now, I mean, and even though it's taken 20-some years to get there, we did it. We did it in 2007.
Well, we've got to have the efficiency down by 30% in 13 years from now, right, in 2020.
Yes. And, you know, we just got out of a hearing earlier today. I'm on the Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming, and we had some individuals who participated in the conference in Bali. This was like post-Kyoto. And you could just hear the outcry and concern of other countries saying, where is the United States? Where is the U.S. in these discussions? Why are they not taking a leadership role? And if you don't want to be involved, then move aside. And quite frankly, I'm embarrassed because here I am, a House of Representatives, and I want to do the right thing, and I will. That's not going to stop me, but I think that the public needs to know that they have some people here that are fighting for them.
Well, the public expects a lot of you, as you know. One thing I know that many people, including myself, are very disappointed in is we have a president who only 2 or 3 years ago was talking about oil being since oil was clear up to $55 a barrel, we didn't need subsidies to the oil companies. Now, here we are at $90 a barrel, and we weren't successful in getting the subsidies to these oil companies out of this bill.
No, and quite frankly, I think that what that tells the American public that we still have unfinished business. And part of it is many of them had their voices heard back last year in November around this time. And so we need to remind people that they have a voice at the ballot box. And in 2008, we'll be able to have our voices heard again. And I hope that we do get better members in both the Senate and the House that will reflect more of the ideals and values that you and I are talking about.
Congresswoman Solis, we've had 30 years go by since we've had an increase in the CAFE standards. Why has it been 30 years to get it increased again? What do you think the major reason for that? Just
tremendous lobbying efforts on the part of the automobile industry and the oil industry, and quite frankly, many of the big auto manufacturers that are deeply embedded in this notion that we have to be so car dependent. And it's really quite frightening, because in communities like mine, even in poor communities, you have households that have five cars. I mean, why do we have to have five cars when other parts of the world, some people don't have cars, they use mass transit, they walk, they bike, they use different modes of transportation. And here it's just been ingrained in our cultural fabric, so to speak. And we have to wean our way off of that, because if we don't, we are going to ruin this planet. We're going to ruin future generations, their lives. And we see it now occurring even in my district. I represent an area called East Los Angeles, where we have high rates of asthma because of smog, diesel emission, and what have you. And those things have to be addressed, because society ends up paying for it in the long run when those people have to go to the emergency clinics and trauma centers.
Well, I wondered if we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left. I wonder if you could just speak to the biofuel segment of this. We're talking about biofuels, which are not even being commercially produced as of today. What biofuels are they talking about, and can you expound upon that a little bit?
Well, I think that what we're really looking at is as different types of fuel, things that you wouldn't even think that could be used as fuel, whether it's, as I said, it could be agricultural products, it could be waste products, it could be syrup, for example. I mean, in Brazil, they're using switchgrass, different kinds of crops and things that could be used, a variation. We can also, I think, create, man-made products that can also be produced that we really haven't brought to the market. So I think the science is there, but we need to make a big investment in R&D and research. And I think that what we're doing is heading in the right direction. I'm really happy that I was able to work with members of our Energy and Commerce Committee to also set aside money, $50 million, for cellulosic ethanol and biofuel research, to direct it at, in particular, universities and colleges, because we need to have more scientific researchers on the ground to help us make these explorations and innovative and competitive types of alternatives. So I'm very much aware that we need to do more in this area. Other countries in Europe are far ahead of us in many ways, but we need to catch up now. And I think that's really, I think, one of the things that I really want to make clear here. We don't have to be left behind here. We can be in the front, in the driver's seat.
We should not be left behind. We've been the innovators. We've been the leaders in technology in the world for a good long time, and there's no reason to let that position slip. We should always be the leaders, and we depend on you for that. So
you know what's amazing to me? In my own district, I had the opportunity to visit a local, what they call like an adult continuation school. It's called the East LA Skills Center. When I went to visit them, these individuals, many were adults already in their second or third career, but were attracted into developing solar panels, putting together the cells to make it, place it, install it, repair it, and just do all kinds of things with this technology. Many of them came from custodial jobs, from IBEW, former union electrical workers, who now sought a new opportunity and a new career and a sustainable wage that they could provide for their families. So I think there's so much that has to be talked about and discussed that I think the public is ready for it, and I think they're going to be excited when they hear about all the details.
The public is ready for it. Congressman Hilda Solis, I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the Guy James Show today, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much. Have a good holiday,
yeah.
Too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, this energy package can be good for a lot of people, and we'll talk a lot more about it in the coming days. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush signed legislation requiring more fuel-efficient vehicles to be available by 2020. Automakers will have to increase vehicle efficiency by 40% to 35 miles per gallon. Late last night, the Senate approved a $555 billion spending measure, providing funding for 14 federal agencies and $70 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Already approved by the House, the bill now goes to the president for signing. The Federal Reserve will lend $20 billion to banks in an effort to ease the credit crunch. Banks continue requesting funds, showing a strong need, which prompted the Fed to announce four special auctions. The executive offices of the vice president were evacuated this morning after the Eisenhower Executive Office building caught fire. One minor injury was reported in the two-alarm blaze, which firefighters had under control within an hour. The nearby White House was not evacuated and had no damage. Approval ratings for the White House and Congress have tumbled to a new low. The Gallup poll says 65% of Americans disapprove of President Bush's performance. 70% disapprove of both Democratic and Republican lawmakers. In Baghdad, U.S. diplomatic and military officials are protesting this week's Turkish air invasion into northern Iraq. Turkey is supposed to ask permission from the U.S. to cross into Iraqi airspace. Authorities say they weren't informed until the airstrikes had already begun. In South Korea, a former Hyundai chief executive has won the presidential election by a landslide despite stock fraud allegations against him. Voters are optimistic that he will be able to revive the economy. In southern Pakistan, rescue workers continue to pull bodies from the wreckage of a passenger train that crashed last night. At least 45 people were killed. More than 100 were injured. One of only 17 existing copies of the Magna Carta fetched $21.3 million at Sotheby's auction house yesterday. The Carlyle Group that purchased the document intends to keep it at the National Archives, where it has been on display for the past 23 years. On Capitol Hill, Congress has overwhelmingly approved legislation strengthening the Freedom of Information Act. Penalties have also been enhanced for agencies violating the Act's provision. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor. Once an aid recipient of the World Bank, China this week pledged to become a contributor. Britain is the leading donor to the World Bank, followed by the U.S. Goldman Sachs marked another record-breaking year, chalking up $3.1 billion in quarterly profit, far surpassing Wall Street expectations. The world's largest investment bank is projecting a guarded outlook for the economy next year due to the current credit crisis. Morgan Stanley, however, posted its first quarterly loss ever today, stunning Wall Street. The 72-year-old firm will also take an additional $5.7 billion mortgage-related write-down and has announced the sale of a $5 billion stake to a Chinese state-run investment fund. The series of Southern California wildfires this fall will cost an estimated $335 million in catastrophic losses, according to Allstate Insurance. The fires resulted in more than 7,000 claims. GM says it will begin offering a buyout program for 5,200 long-term employees next month. The early retirement incentives include a cash payment. By ridding itself of the more experienced workers, GM can hire less expensive employees. Light sweet crude trading at $91.10 a barrel. And at the closer at the in Wall Street today, the Dow is down 59, the NASDAQ down 9, and S&P 500 down 7. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you. Thank you for staying with us through the news. We've got about 8 or 10 minutes until we got our guest, Brent Podolsky from The Hill is going to be with us. And we're going to talk about this latest what I consider to be the real Watergate of the Bush administration, these CIA tapes that were destroyed, and it looks to me like with the absolute knowledge of the White House. We'll talk about that in a minute. Somebody wrote me an email the other day, and I'll just answer it. Wrote me an email asking me why it appears that I just hate the right-wing pundits, your Ann Coulters and your Dennis Prager's and your Hannity's and Limbaugh's and Jonah Goldberg's and like that. You want to know why? You want to know why? And it's true. It's true. I hate to use that word hate. It's very harsh. But I really hate what these people stand for. I hate what they do. And I got an idea that I would hate a few of them personally if I knew them as well, because they actually believe what they write. And let me give you an example. I want to give you an example of why I hate these people. And here it is. I have Jonah Goldberg, and you all know who Jonah Goldberg is. He writes for the National Review. He's the spawn of that right-wing bitch, Lucy Ann Goldberg, that was so prominent during the impeachment of Bill Clinton. That ought to say enough about him right there. But I want to read you the notes off the jacket of his new book called Liberal Fascism. You want to know why I hate these people? This is why. And I will quote this off of the jacket of his new book. Liberal fascism offers a startling new perspective on the theories and practices that define fascist politics, replacing conveniently manufactured myths with surprising and enlightening research. I want to remind you that the original fascists were really on the left, and that liberals from Woodrow Wilson to FDR to Hillary Clinton have advocated policies and principles remarkably similar to those of Hitler's National Socialism and Mussolini's fascism. This from Jonah Goldberg. Contrary to what most people think, the Nazi were ardent socialists, hence the term National Socialism. They believed in free health care and guaranteed jobs. They confiscated inherited wealth and spent vast sums on public education. They purged the church from public policy. promoted a new form of pagan spirituality, and inserted the authority of the state into every nook and cranny of daily life. The Nazis declared war on smoking, supported abortion, euthanasia, and gun control. They loathed the free market, provided generous pensions for the elderly, and maintained a strict racial quota system in their universities, where campus speech codes were all the rage. The Nazis led the world in organic farming and alternative medicine. Hitler was a strict vegetarian, and Himmler was an animal rights activist. Do these striking parallels mean that today's liberals are genocidal maniacs intent on conquering the world and imposing a new racial order? Not at all. Yet, it is hard to deny that modern progressism and classical fascism shared the same intellectual roots. We often forget, for example, that Mussolini and Hitler had many admirers in the United States. W.E.B. Du Bois was inspired by Hitler's Germany, and Irving Berlin praised Mussolini in song. Many fascist tenets were espoused by American progressives like John Dewey and Woodrow Wilson, and FDR incorporated fascist policies in the New Deal. Fascism was an international movement that appeared in different forms in different countries, depending on the vagaries of national culture and temperament. In Germany, fascism appeared as a genocidal racist nationalism. In America, it took a friendlier, more liberal form. The modern heirs of the friendly fascist tradition include the New York Times, the Democratic Party, the Ivy League professorate, and the liberals of Hollywood. The quintessential liberal fascist isn't an SS stormtrooper, and get this, the quintessential liberal fascist isn't an SS stormtrooper. It is a female grade school teacher with an education degree from Brown or Swarthmore. These assertions may sound strange to modern ears, but that is simply because we've forgotten what fascism is. That from Jonah Goldberg, right-wing pundit, writes for the National Review. And somebody has the nerve to write to me and ask me why I hate these people. The quintessential fascist is a female grade school teacher with an education degree from Brown or Swarthmore. My God. They don't seem to have any bounds to their hatred. There seems to be nowhere they won't go with it. Jonah Goldberg is a disgrace, as is his mother. She showed her worth during the Clinton impeachment, and now her little boy is out doing his work as well. I resent this. I abhor what he has written. And do I have hatred for him and his work? I do. I will readily admit that. I think it's just absolutely disgusting that someone would write something like this. But then again, we are talking about the right-wing Republicans. And there's no limit to how far they will stoop. There's none whatsoever. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be right back.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with scissors.
It's the least you can do.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. Great having you along with us. And as promised, right now, we have on the line with us Brent Badowski. Brent, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
I read with fascination your article this morning on the Hills Pundit blog, entitled, for those of you who haven't seen it yet, entitled Torture Tapes Are the Watergate of Our Times. And, Brent, I absolutely agree with you on this. If this doesn't do it, I don't know what would.
Well, I think we all have scandal and crime fatigue and overload.
Yes.
And it's sometimes hard to see the forest for the trees because there are so many things that are wrong that they've done, that are illegal that they've done, that sometimes we miss the most important thing, and this is one of the most important things, not only because torture is illegal under international law, under Geneva, under Nuremberg, under the U.S. War Crimes Act, under European Community Law, under British law, under Polish law, you get the idea. But because you have now a clear and publicly known obstruction of justice, where evidence is now publicly available that they were destroying the evidence of the crime. So you got the crime of torture, you've got the crime of obstruction, you've got public evidence about it. They're trying to keep Congress out of it, which they won't be able to do. They're trying to keep the federal courts out of it, which they won't be able to do. Tomorrow or Friday, there's a hearing that a federal judge demanded over the objection of the Justice Department on this very issue. And so what's happening is the toothpaste is out of the tube, and every day we read new revelations about who was involved and what they did. And I think this is going to lead right into the Oval Office. It will be very interesting to watch the process unfold. And what we learned today, Guy, which we talked about earlier, is it turns out the top lawyers in the Bush administration were in on the discussion about destroying the tapes. That implicates all of them, and they're going to end up being subpoenaed, and then they're going to have to say what they did, and more dangerously for Bush, they're going to have to say at some point who they told. Did they tell the president? Did they tell the vice president? We will soon be having the conversation again, not those of us on head-on or those of us in progressive circles, but the entire country. What did the president know, and when did he know it, and the vice president as well?
Brent, do you think it's even conceivable? We talked about this earlier on the program today. Do you think it's even conceivable that the president of the United States, who gets a daily, and I think a lot of people forget, he gets a daily briefing every day from the CIA. We've had people on the show, people like Ray McGovern, for example, that used to do that job, go in and brief the president every day on the issues of the day. Is it in your mind even conceivable that the president of the United States wouldn't be told about these tapes?
Oh, as an objective probability, he almost certainly was told. What will matter is how the evidence comes out when people are asked, particularly some of the people named today, the lawyers for the president, whether they told him and what they say, and then that may end up being litigated. But, I mean, my guess on all of this with about a 98% certainty is on most of the things that we've all talked about, on torture and on eavesdropping, et cetera. Not only was the president told But I personally believe there are executive orders implementing things that reasonable people would conclude are illegal. The issue will be an evidentiary issue. What makes this more interesting by the hour in terms of the destruction of torture tapes is it's all coming out publicly. And it's being leaked by insiders who objected, presumably, to what they were doing. And so every day you pick up the newspaper, there's another story about something, and I think it's going to continue and continue until we have the inevitable special prosecutor, which they will not be able to resist, in my opinion.
Do you think they'll be able to put up a firewall with, you know, with their new AG, with McCasey? Already he's gotten involved in, the NIE case, and well, in this case, actually. Do you think they'll be able to put up a firewall against this like they've done with so many times before?
No, I don't think they will be, and that's why I make the analogy in my piece today to Watergate. They're certainly going to try, and they have been trying. They have already tried to keep the House Intelligence Committee out of this, and the House Intelligence Committee, including the ranking Republican on the committee, said no, they're going to investigate. They then tried to keep the federal courts out of this, and Judge Kennedy said no, we're going to hold a hearing, and he hauled them all into court on Friday. This is so extreme, what's going on, and as other things are, but the public evidence of this is now becoming so substantial that they will not be able to put the toothpaste back in the tube on this one, and I think this is the gravest threat to Bush's presidency of all of the many scandals because of the gravity of the crime, because of the obstruction around the crime, and because the evidence is starting to come out publicly and clearly.
Well, I think you mentioned earlier about some of the insiders who've are starting to talk. I think that's the real problem they have. People who've been in the administration, not necessarily at the highest levels, but things are starting to leak out here and there. And you only have so many fingers to put in the dike, and it appears that it's starting to get away from them. But still, they act like with the arrogance, like, well, what are you going to do about it? We don't really care.
Well, they live, the Bush people, in a reality distortion field that is unprecedented. I mean, there are things being done in this administration that were never done by Nixon even, not by Reagan, not by George Herbert Walker Bush. And to a degree, Congress, even the Democrats, are in a reality distortion field because they still haven't summoned the energy to oppose this stuff with the vehemence that they should. The difference is when you start getting public evidence coming out, like we are right now, it creates legal processes and political and public relations pressures that at some point become irresistible, and I think we are there right now. I mean, Mukasey is already trying to adopt the Justice Department policies of Alberto Gonzalez, saying that Congress should be out of this and that the court should be out of this and that the Justice Department and the CIA should investigate it alone. And they have already been told no by Congress. They've already been told no by the courts. There is a very low tolerance, close to zero tolerance for any more of this. And within the administration, and this is important to understand, Guy, close to 100% of the military people, from the generals to the admirals to the privates, oppose torture, as every commander in every branch of the service from George Washington until today opposed torture. Most of the CIA opposed torture. They were ordered to do it. There is a subgroup over there that was part of it, and some of them, like in any group, supported it. But the overwhelming majority of people at the CIA oppose torture. They know it doesn't work. They know that they're going to end up holding a legal hot potato, and they were ordered to do it. So the number of people that oppose this stuff and that are candidates to leak it and candidates to go to prosecutors with evidence, it's like murder on the Orient Express. Who did it? Everybody did it. You've got a very small sub-faction of Bush, Cheney's people, and sort of a rogue or isolated and compartmentalized small group within the CIA that were doing this. Everybody else thinks this is nuts. Everybody else thinks this is illegal. And as evidence comes out publicly, more evidence comes out publicly on top of that. The pressure to leak, to go to prosecutors, to go to Congress, to go to courts, is just enormous right now. And that's why you picked up a story today that we find out that four of the top lawyers in the Justice Department, in the administration, including the counsel and chief of staff to Dick Cheney, David Addington, were in the loop on this. None of us were surprised that Alberto Gonzalez, as usual, was in the loop on this. None of us were surprised that Harriet Myers, the former counsel, who almost amazingly got nominated and confirmed on the Supreme Court. They were all in the loop on this. This is the inner loop at the highest level of the legal enabling team for torture, for eavesdropping. It doesn't get higher on this level unless you're at the personal desk of the president and the vice president. And a lot of people, including the former general counsel of the CIA, oppose these things. And we will find out that they were going to other people to try to stop it, probably including the better people at the Justice Department, such as former Deputy AG Jim Comey. He was the one that blew the whistle on this bizarre Ashcroft in the hospital scene. And I think you're going to find out soon. There'll be leaks. I predict that more torture tapes were also destroyed. I think that's the next thing coming. So the toothpaste is out of the tube, and it's pouring all over the White House right now, and it's going to be tough to put it back in.
Oh, I think you're right. And I for one, am anxious because of a local consideration. Our show originates here out of Southwest Florida. And Porter Goss, a real lackey appointee to the CIA, was right smack dab in the middle of this. And we all know Porter kind of got squeezed out of the CIA. And he has not said a word about anything since he's left the CIA. And I'm anxious to see if being the good soldier will be something he can continue to do if he gets called before Congress, if he gets called before Congress.
Well, and if he gets subpoenaed by a special prosecutor, if he gets called before any of the federal courts, it's one thing to go on television and say what you're going to say, and it's another thing to try to say no comment. But when you start getting subpoenaed by courts and by Congress, I predict in the end he will tell the truth, because the consequences of not telling the truth and getting caught are so extreme. That's the problem they've got. You know, it's one thing to try to hide and avoid comment, and it's another thing to talk to the press. The consequence of lying and dissembling are nothing when you're talking to the press. The consequence of lying and dissembling when you're under subpoena, when you're under oath, when you're before Congress, when you're before courts, are prison. And there's a lot of people right now in Washington, as I wrote in my piece today, who are calling their criminal lawyers now and saying, what do we do, boss? We got a problem. There's a problem. Houston, we have a problem. And it's an extremely serious matter when you're dealing with the probable crime of torture and then the probable crime of obstruction of justice and the almost certainty that they're going to get subpoenaed by Congress and by the courts to have to discuss this under oath. That's serious business, and they can run, but in the end they can't hide.
Well, it's just almost unthinkable that this took place. It's unthinkable that they filmed it. And then against orders, evidently, against the law, got rid of these tapes. It's a phenomenal story. It really is. And I think you're right. You think there are going to be more torture tapes that will be destroyed that we've heard about, and more stories about all this?
Yeah, I think we will find out that there were more tapes, and I think we will find out that more of them were destroyed. And I just think that the cat is out of the bag here. It's going to get pretty ugly, certainly for Bush and for Cheney and for the people involved. There is a strange perversion about this entire thing, an almost kind of sadism by some people, at times a nearly sexual perversion about it, to tell you the truth. And for some reason, some good, some bad, this was all on tape. And then they panicked. And at the time that the tapes were actually being destroyed, they were reading in the newspapers that there were investigations, which is why the timing of the destruction of the tapes is probable evidence of an obstruction of justice. They knew the subpoenas were coming, and they were destroying the evidence in advance of it. And enough people know about this internally that all it takes is one to turn state's evidence or to call the New York Times or to go to the Intelligence Committee or a special prosecutor, and it blows the whistle on all of them. So they got a big problem here. And in the scheme of wrongs and crimes, not only is this one of the worst, but this is one of the more provable ones, because a lot of evidence is coming out as we speak. And you pick up the paper tomorrow and Friday and over the weekend, I predict we're close to even more stuff coming out.
Well, somewhere in Washington, there's a John Dean and that will come forward whose conscience bothers him and will talk, whether it's out of intimidation or just plain good old-fashioned morals. We shall see. Brent, do you have an update on the current status of Rove and Myers on their contempt of Congress issue?
Only that the committee's been voting on it, but I do personally, I don't think that's where the action will ultimately be. It's an important legal issue. And to summarize this, where the subpoenas have to be drawn to win is on an issue like torture, possibly an issue like eavesdropping, where the argument will be, can the president claim executive privilege to cover up a criminal offense? On the issue that they've been talking to Rove and Myers about, stuff like whether or not the U.S. attorneys were wrongly fired, it is a far more murky and gray area than torture, than obstruction of justice, where the case is very clear. So I will predict whatever happens on the subpoenas and the contempt issues so far, in the end, the bombshell is going to be on probably on torture, possibly on eavesdropping, but almost definitely on torture. Yeah, I don't think even the current Supreme Court can say that it is legal to claim executive privilege to cover up a crime. Remember, the Nixon case was 9-0, and even Rehnquist and the conservatives voted with the 9,
right,
that they had to produce the Watergate tapes. And I don't think it'll be 9-0 because we got a couple of guys like Clarence Thomas and Scalia who are from another planet. But I do think it'll be 5, 6, or 7 votes when the issue finally hits the courts, which will be probably in about 2 years. But the statute of limitations on crimes goes a long time after that, and there's a limited number of people they can pardon in one mass pardon, which I think is coming, but I don't think it'll be enough.
Well, for the good of this nation and the good of the Constitution, this has to be followed through. If there's ever an issue that needs to be followed through on, this most certainly is it. Brent, your blog today, your comments today were on the Hill's Pundit blog, right?
Yeah, if you go to thehill.com and then under Pundit blog from the left column, you'll get right to it.
All right, and a lot of great articles. Brent, you do a great job, and we hope to have you back on soon again if there's further developments on this.
Well, thanks. Good talking to you, guy.
Thank you. Brent Badowski, well spoken, and I agree. I agree that we've sat here many, many times over these past few years and said, well, this is the big one. This is the big one. This is the big one. I agree with Brent on this utterly and completely, that this is something that I don't think they can escape. I really don't. And it's not going to be anything that's going to be settled soon. And like he said, it'd be a couple of years before it got to the Supreme Court. But I don't think, even in a country that's as apathetic as we are right now, I don't think this nation would stand for this if the ugly truth comes out, and it is what it looks like it is. I don't think even the most apathetic people in this country would abide what has happened. So we shall see. It's an egregious violation. If the people from the White House were in on this, if the people from the White House, as reported in the New York Times, were suggesting and urging them to destroy these tapes, it's a very egregious violation, and it's something that has to be settled, that's for sure. We're going to pause for a break right now, and we shall be back in just a moment or two. Don't go away.
You better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping, and he knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
said, so be good for Christmas sake. He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming.
I've gone, for tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Someday you'll know I was the one, but tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. And now the time has come, and so my love I must go. And though I lose a friend, in the end you will know. Oh, one day you'll find that I have gone, but tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. And now the time has come, and so my love I must go. And though I lose a friend, in the end you will know. Oh, one day you'll find that I have gone, but tomorrow I'll follow the sun.
Ah, yes, the Beatles, I'll Follow the Sun. Welcome back to the show. Say, I was just reminded, our good friend John from over here in west of us in Cape Coral, Florida, reminded me that solar panels here in Florida anyway, and you would think, gee whiz, with all the sun that we have here, when we have these little winds called hurricanes, John says he knows people who lost their roofs who had solar panels, and others who had neighbors' solar panels blow into their houses, and their houses also developed leaks, too. So that's always something to think about, too. Thank goodness I didn't lose my roof through during any of the hurricanes, and John didn't either, so that's a good thing. We made it through another season here in Southwest Florida without any hurricanes, thank goodness. And that didn't stop the insurance companies. Oh, don't get me started on that. That didn't stop the insurance company from raping and pillaging everybody they could. You know, it's a hell of a note when we in this country, who at least not so long ago was considered the leaders of the free world, I'm not so sure we are anymore. Mr. Bush has seen to it that has gone by the wayside, and I think it'll probably take a long time to repair the damage that's been done. But I'm sure you've all noticed that we as a nation are getting a whole lot more jaded and apathetic toward the crimes and corruptions of the Bush administration. It's a daily thing. If not daily, it's kind of a weekly thing. It seemed like we've had a major scandal at least a couple of times a month this entire year. And I've really grown to think that was their plan all along. It just pulls so much crap that the people will tire of looking at it and we'll have our way with them. I really think that's what they're planning on. You know, the stench coming out of this White House is almost unbearable these days. There's hardly a day goes by, but what we don't hear of yet another filthy, reprehensible deed done by the commander-in-chief and this band of thieves he's surrounded himself with. And this CIA tape deal is just the latest and a long line of corrupt, illegal scandals that these people have pulled off without a hint of conscience. And I think back in the time during the Nixon administration, and I remember thinking this will never be allowed to happen again. This will teach our country a lesson. And here we are, over 30 years later, with a president and his thuggish helpers who make Nixon and Haldeman and Ehrlichman and Liddy and the whole lot, the whole rest of that crew, look like a bunch of choir boys. And I don't know how many have read it, but when John Dean wrote his book, Worse Than Watergate, which I've got sitting on the shelf here, it's a hell of a book, he was being kind. And he wrote that last year before another half dozen of these major scandals came along. You know, at least Nixon didn't have the Justice Department and the courts and nearly every other position of authority completely corrupted like we see in this Bush administration. And to give you an example of just how bad this is in comparison, a week ago, Alberto Fujimori, the former president of Peru, was sentenced to 6 years in jail for abusing his presidential powers by ordering a warrantless search of the apartment of the wife of a corrupt official. He faces further charges that could add another 30 years to his sentence, stemming from the deaths of suspected terrorists and the kidnapping of a journalist. It wouldn't happen here, kidnapping journalists and others, holding people in, you know, incommunicado for years without charges, sometimes torturing them, perhaps allowing them to die in confinement. These things are standard procedure in Bush America right now. As are the warrantless wiretappings, as we're finding out more and more and more, and the searches and the other illegal intrusions into everybody's lives. And, of course, Fujimori never started a war under false pretenses in which hundreds of thousands of people died, millions were rendered homeless, and a country was reduced to ruins. You know, Peru takes action. And the United States of America, the people here, we put it on our MP3 players and talk about Jesus and homosexuals and they look to a Bible-thumping slickster like Mike Huckabee right now for their leadership. Ex-President Jimmy Carter gave a speech back in 1974 after reading the transcript of the Nixon tapes, and Jimmy Carter said this, that's what, 33 years ago, said, the Constitution charges us with a direct responsibility for determining what our government is and ought to be. I have read parts of the embarrassing transcript, and I've seen the proud statement of a former attorney general who protected his boss and now brags of the fact that he tiptoed through a minefield and came out, quote, clean, unquote. Carter went on to say, you know, I can't imagine somebody like Thomas Jefferson tiptoeing through a minefield on the technicalities of the law and then bragging about being clean afterwards. That from former President Jimmy Carter. I don't think you have to use your imagination to picture the Bush administration just like was described right there just a moment ago, safely making their way through that same minefield with no regard for any consequences. And they're using an armored tank called the Patriot Act. They're hiding behind the Patriot Act. And don't think this wasn't intentional when they ran that thing through. The law is what the Bush administration wants it to be. Not what it is, it's what the Bush administration wants us to be. Justice is what they say it is. And we the people don't do anything but argue about Christmas and heretics and what the Walmart greeters are saying this year. You know, how sad is it that this country that really and truly, at one time in the past, had a legitimate claim to to holding up that torch of liberty for the entire world to see has to look to a place like Peru for a lesson on the limits of governmental power. My God. If that isn't sobering, I don't know what is. Here we've got a country that we would have considered a banana republic a long time ago, although I don't think they ever grew bananas in Peru. But now we've got them doing what's right by the law. And in this country, we've abandoned what's right and proper. It's sickening. It's just sickening that we've allowed this to happen in this country. And, you know, this is the same Republican Party that once spent $60 million of our money investigating a 20-year-old real estate deal and finding nothing, by the way. They attempted to make an impeachable scandal out of firing a travel agent, and actually did impeach a president of the United States for denying an act that was not a crime and wasn't connected to any of the charges against him. You know, in the same United States of America that a generation ago ran a president out of office for interfering with a burglary investigation, that ran a vice president out of office for using his office for personal gain. Are our memories that short? Is this the same country? I don't think it is. This is a country so terrified that guys with beards are going to take over our country and you know, lay waste to Festus, Missouri, and Keokuk, Iowa, that we'll allow the closest thing to a fascist leader we've ever had to tell the courts to ignore the destruction of evidence in open defiance of a court order. This has become a country so insane with irrational and baseless fear that it's willing to do without the law and depend on the honesty of crooks and liars anytime the president says boo. Just think of what happened the other evening. You know, we had the Bush administration the other evening telling U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy, we're not obligated to obey the law. And you better not question anything we do either, because your laws get in the way of our secret investigations. That's what they're doing. That's what this new AG is trying. No, 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 no. Don't ask us any questions because we've got a secret investigation going. This is a man that a bunch of Democrats voted for to confirm. Hell, the ink isn't dry on his acceptance yet. And already he's screwing us. Did we not warn the Democratic leadership not to let this man take over the Attorney Generalship of the United States? When he wouldn't answer the question whether or not waterboarding was torture, didn't we know right then and there that he was a Bush lackey of the highest order, and now he's proving it only a few weeks after he was confirmed with the help of the Democrats letting it out of conference and to a full vote of the Senate? Did you and I not warn the Democrats in power about this? Did you and I not send hundreds and thousands of emails to our senators about this? Didn't we have the brains and the forethought to know that this man Mukasey was not fit for this job, that nobody appointed by this administration was fit for the job? By God, I would have left that office remain vacant until the end of Bush's term, rather than put somebody in that he appointed. Say what you want to about hardball politics, but that is what they should have done. How much more clear can they make it that we're in a terrible danger right now from these people and their war on the courts These are neocon insurgents. I know impeachment's going to be difficult, since they can and probably have begun and will destroy any records or any other evidence, anything they like, without even bothering to deny it, has been demonstrated. Nor will they recognize the authority of any other branch of government to question them. They just say, to hell with you. You're not going to question us. But I really fear that impeachment remains the only legal way to remove these thieves and thugs and liars from office, and I fear that even that might be too little and too late. It's certainly getting too late. You know, there's not going to be any outside group of religious nuts that they've got us scared to death of. There's not going to be any outside group of Islamo-fascists bring down the United States or do us any serious damage. There isn't going to be any foreign entity conquer us. You know, we're not going to trade freedom for tyranny. You know, only we can do that. And we will do that unless the remaining support for this illegal government gives way to some sort of recognition that the only thing that we have to fear, the only thing we have to fear, the only thing we've ever had to really fear, is Bush and his lawless government. We've been a country that's, oh, be scared, be afraid, be very afraid. And what they've made us be afraid of is not what we need to be afraid of. There's only one thing this country needs to be afraid of right now, and it's not a bunch of Islamo-fascists. It's not more people with airplanes and another 9/11. That's not what this country needs to be afraid of. That sort of thing will never bring down this country. Never. It never could. It never would. It's not possible. Because sooner or later, the people of the United States would stand against it. But what do you do? What do you do when you've got people so immoral, so unethical, so, and I'll say it, so evil, as these people in this Bush administration that are leading this country to ruin, and they know they are doing it, and they're doing it for their own damn benefit, and that's the sickest thing anybody has ever done to this country. Over the lifespan of this country, there have been dozens of people prosecuted for treason that have done far less damage to this country than this Bush administration did. Do I sound extreme by saying that? I don't care. Because there comes a time when finally enough is enough. The very idea that we had people within the government of this United States torturing people in the first place is enough. But the idea that people inside the White House, that people right next to the President of the United States, people that had his ear, the idea that they knew this and they went along with this and they covered it up, I can't think of anything more troubling and more disgusting. And there are people in this country that would think of voting for somebody else within that political party right now? A party that 60, 70% of them still back a man like George Bush? And somebody would consider voting for somebody in that party? I can't conceive of that. I cannot. Would I sit here and say the Democrats are blameless? No, hell no. would I sit here and claim the Democrats don't need a lot of improvement and have done a lot of things? Absolutely they have. But knowing what we know, knowing that there are, what, 7 or 8 guys running for the Republican nomination right now, none of which are willing to stand up before the American people and condemn the actions of the Bush administration, would that make a single one of them worthy of occupying the Oval Office? The answer to that is no. None of them are worthy. Nobody in the Republican Party is worthy right now. None of them are willing to stand up. I mean, even the idea that the press brought up the other day, oh, he was criticizing Bush. Oh, no, I wasn't. No, I wasn't. I wasn't criticizing the president. I am so sick to death of this. And I don't mean to get all emotional about it, but I don't know. This might be the straw that broke the camel's back. Like I said, the torture, there are renegades within governments that will do such a thing. We know that. There are human scum in every culture around the world. We have our own. But the idea that it was sanctioned by the CIA, the idea that the White House sanctioned it, knew about it, and then tried to cover it up, is against everything this country stands for or ever stood for. And they must be held accountable. They must be. And there's not enough being done to see that they are. I hope Brent Badowski is absolutely right. I hope this is the time that the toothpaste is out of the tube and it can't be put back. Because of all the things that have happened, besides starting an illegal war, this is the worst. And I won't remain silent about it. I cannot. And I know you won't either. Oh, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. We have so much more to talk about than what we get to. It seems like it's always the case. I do want to mention tomorrow about the strange promise made by Bill Clinton saying that if we make his wife president, he and Daddy Bush would travel around the world making it safe again to love America. Bill, maybe better hold off on that one just a little bit, okay? I'm not so sure that's a great idea, taking Daddy Bush anywhere. Of course, Daddy Bush has come out and said, hey, why would I have to apologize? My son, he's doing a great job as president. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. Said, he's proud of the role America continues to play around the world as the beacon of hope and freedom and a democracy. So, he wholeheartedly supports the President of the United States, including his foreign policy, says Daddy Bush. I wouldn't go any place with a man that says that. Nowhere. And Bill Clinton shouldn't either. Thanks for joining us today here on the Guy James Show. I appreciate your being with us. We're part of the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director. Please do remember that we're a listener-supported program. Could use your assistance at this time. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.